I'm wrestling, not weak for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 84 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defend Soap, Defend What You Have Built, and Dahlemer Mats. And today we are joined by none other than Tom Ryan. But before we get into the show, we would like to ask you to go to our Twitter at T-Row and Funky Show and give us a vote right now. We are beating FRL for the number one wrestling podcast in the country, or maybe in the entire galaxy. But we need a few more of your votes, so go ahead and knock that out. Tommy, I'm going to let you get started. I know you know Tom better than I do. You were a part of the Ohio State, maybe starting the dynasty. So go ahead and get us kicked off.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and get started. For those of you guys that don't know, Coach Ryan got the job at Ohio State in spring of 2006. I jumped on his staff right away and worked with him alongside him for, I think, officially 3 or 4 years, and then unofficially another 2 or 3. So Tom and I have become big-time friends. Happy to have you on. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to be with you, Tommy.
So, you know, Ben's it's a little awkward for me sometimes to interview people that I'm friends with. Ben knows that. So I'm going to fire off with the first question. I was at the Ohio State wrestling practice last Saturday. It was a huge recruit weekend. I know you can't talk too much about it, but, you know, as a guy who wrestled Ohio State, seeing everybody there working out was absolutely incredible. I mean, I almost wanted to stop practice and ask if each group could wrestle one at a time. between the guys on the team and the RTC guys, I mean, it was incredible. I don't know how you don't commit to Ohio State watching that thing. And that was without Kyle Snyder, Ben.
Well, he's not that good anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So, at any rate, Tom, you know, just real quick question here. What is it like having, you know, an Olympic and world champion in the wrestling room every day?
Yeah, I sometimes kick myself. So obviously with a Kyle Snyder, a Logan Stieber, and obviously at your time there, right, what you did there with the people around you, you lifted up the entire team. There were 5 All-Americans, I believe, your senior year that you greatly impacted. So Kyle's that kind of guy. You know, I think in this era, Logan really got things going, which you were a part of. Getting Logan there, you know, he wins 4 national titles. You've got great momentum. You've got young people thinking that, well, if he can do it, if they can help him do it, they can help me do it. And you think that, at least from my perspective, was how do you top that? You know, how do you top a guy that, you know, comes in and wins 4 national titles, and in comes this little, well, not little, but super guy named Kyle Snyder. And you know, the year Logan won his 4th national title, you know, Kyle wins a world title. And just, I think, the law of attraction, you know, is certainly in play right now, you know, in the wrestling room. And to your point, watching practice, you know, obviously as a coach, you're trying to remove the excitement factor and focus on needs, but it's hard to do.
Right.
Because there's just so much good action going on in the room that you can get caught up in really what you're witnessing, and which is incredible passion and talent by a lot of people. So right now it's a lot of fun, you know, being in the room, and you know, clearly there's a program in Penn State that's got a super high standard. There's a lot of programs out there with a lot of good people, and this program, despite all the talent that we have and the love we have for what we're doing, it's a competitive world. So we've got to stay hungry.
So I want to ask about Kyle Snyder, since you guys brought him up real quick. I got the opportunity to have him up here for a clinic in May. He was fantastic, mature beyond his years, did a great job with the kids. And he ended up flying back early because he needed to get to his morning workout. I really wanted to have him out for dinner that night and grill him, Tom, because I love sport psychology and I love understanding how people become successful. And to my knowledge, everyone has adversity. Everyone has struggles they have to get over. I can't see where they came about in Kyle's life. And that was kind of what I wanted to ask him. So, is there any way you could let us into his mind a little bit, maybe how he got to the way he is, how he's still mentally strong, how he loves to compete so much? Because, if you saw him starting out the Sagalayev match, there's no faking that. He was just freaking excited to be there. He was pumped. there's no other way to put it. So how did he get to how he is today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And hey, I don't get to speak to you too often, so congrats on your last fight too.
Oh, thank you.
I saw some highlights, and you're looking for someone that wants to really challenge you, from what I understand. You said so.
Yeah, Tommy's signing up actually.
Yeah, that's why I'm training for the half marathon, Tom. It's phase one for Ben.
Good. been in coaching for 25 years, really been blessed to be around some amazing people, and he has an attitude about him. I would say that he has complete, or as close to anyone I've ever been around. We call it the landlord of your mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
The things that he knows that there's control needed of the mind, and the things that he puts into it can only produce great fruit. He doesn't allow things to come into his mind that can cause anything but producing great fruit. He's very careful about what he allows in, and he has just a true love for competition. He's a throwback. He's a gladiator. He's a Spartan. He loves every aspect of the challenge itself and the battle and the self-improvement. He's got a great faith, which I think people, if you follow him on Twitter or see the things he tweets, he's a guy that really believes emphatically that God is real and that he's made in the image of God. And I think that's a really powerful element in his life. And he loves what he's doing. I mean, he truly loves what he's doing. I don't know if you saw the tweet even before the finals of the Worlds.
Yep.
He's incredibly humble, but he just said, time to see who the king is. Right?
Yeah. And I loved it. I was so pumped.
Right? Right?
I don't know if you can comment on this, Tom, but I agree. I believe Kyle is so humble, but he's able to step out of character in an appropriate dosage where you like it when he says stuff like that. He doesn't ever he doesn't ever do it in he just does it in the proper dose at the right time. It's like, that was kind of cool. And then he goes back to being, pretty darn humble.
Yeah, he's a master of humility, in a way that, to your point, that there's never a sense that he's arrogant, because he's not. There's not an ounce of his body that's arrogant, but he has a lot of belief in himself, as he should. He certainly trains as hard as anyone I've ever seen. He's extremely resilient. His resiliency is incredible to push himself, in the morning.
Are you talking about his physical resiliency?
His physical, his mental, just everything. I think it stems from what he's just constantly putting in his mind and what he wards his brain of.
So what do you think about his childhood or his upbringing that made him this way? Because obviously something made him this way. And that's what I'm curious. If anyone could have 10 Kyle Snyders on their team, it would be the best thing ever, right? I mean, not results-wise,
really
just mental-wise.
Yeah. At some point in time, he really grew to love the process, right?
Yeah.
So he tells the story of where, at one point, he only wanted to compete. He didn't want to go to practice.
Uh-huh.
Right? As a young kid, he didn't want to go to practice. So what a transition from a young kid who liked to compete but didn't really embrace the the chosen suffering, right, mm-hmm. that's needed to be great in competition, this ability to find love in the training. He made that transition perhaps because he saw the results of it, right? The more time he put in, the more success he had. And he really started, I think Tervell's helped him with this quite a bit. Tervell is I know you guys have had him on the show.
Yep.
He really has a youthful approach to, focusing on the things that you should focus on. But, I mean, yeah, I'd like to bottle it. It's hard to verbalize what it is that he has other than like a true love for it. You know, a deep love for every step along the way in becoming, which I think he would say this, so I'll say it, becoming as Christ-like as possible, like living with a purpose. And the end goal for him is to become as near to perfection in his wrestling and outside his wrestling as one can be. And, you know, he's a difference maker for us. And so, yeah, I'm not sure I explained it very well, but he certainly...
I mean, when you got a kid who's 21 with two world titles and an Olympic title, it probably is hard to put exactly into words, because if we could bottle that up, I think we'd all be billionaires.
Yeah, you know, I'll say the story where, you know, I don't know if you've heard about this story, but the year he was wrestling Gwiz, who, you know, he comes out of redshirt on New Year's Eve, we announce it, right? And Gwiz tells a funny story how, you know, he's kind of relaxing with his buddies, and Twitter explodes, and Kyle's out of redshirt, and he calls his coach. And at the national tournament that year, Kyle was voted as the OW. You know, it's a great match. And I'm standing just off the platform, watch him get rewarded for his work. And a guy comes up to me. And he said to me, "Hey, I work at the venue. Are you with him?" And I said, "Yeah, I am with him." And he said, "Oh, well, you know, all weekend long, my job was to make sure that the water jugs were filled up." And this kid thanked me over and over again. And I was like, incredible. This guy keeps doing things that I should be doing. I should be thinking. Like, why didn't I think of that? Like,
yeah, of
it's
course.
Just the, I mean... the essence of him is so like pure, and so he just sees things in a way. He remembers things about people that makes you feel like, you know, you're his best friend, and he means it. He's so sincere. So, you know, he's made a huge difference, obviously, at Ohio State, and you know, the recruiting. Imagine the recruiting factor with him is huge. We have people committing that know that either they take the spot to train with him, or they will have to beat the person who does.
Yeah,
right.
And they do not want to relinquish. An intelligent person that is driven, that is a priceless, right? We all know as competitors that is a priceless that they are not willing to relinquish. So, you know, he's helped in many ways.
Wow. Okay, so let's get off Kyle. I mean, I asked you probably do a whole podcast about Kyle. That probably wouldn't be too challenging. Let's get on some other guys on your team. You know, I think the biggest news recently, well, there's been a bunch of it, but Nathan Tomasello dropping to 125 pounds from 133 pounds where he spent last year. 125 kind of cleaned out, but you know, except Suriano is still there, and Darren Cruz comes back, who Suriano owns a win over, and I believe Nathan Tomasello does also. What was the thought process there? Is it because it's strictly better for the team, which I know guys have made sacrifices for, or did Nathan Tomasello think this is the best place for him to win another national title?
No, this was a complete team decision. You know, last year, moving him up, he wanted to go up. He wants to go. He really deep down would like to go 33. And last year, when you look at the point total that you were going to get between the two athletes, you felt that, hey, Nathan, make the call. This year, it's not quite that way. This is more of, you know, the Tomasello-Pletcher combination will score more points than a freshman at 25 and Tomasello at 33. So he understands that you know, the responsibility is to the team first. He'll make the cut. And, you know, we've looked at the calendar, and based on the way the NCAA lays out a college season with dual meets, we will not expect him to be down to weight in every event, but he'll be down to weight in our key events.
Yeah.
And so he'll drop, and Pletcher will come down, you know, where he belongs. We had to put Pletcher in last year because of the Hayes injury.
Yep.
So, you know, those two together we feel good about.
So do you anticipate
the first two weights?
Do you anticipate Nate or Nathan? What should I call him? Nate or Nathan or NATO? Or you don't care?
Either one, yeah, NATO, okay. Yeah, they're all good.
Do you anticipate him competing in any more international events? Because obviously I just saw he wrestled in the Medved, which was last weekend, did really well over there. I think he finished second. Is he going to do any of that, or will it just be not too many weigh-ins in the college season?
He will. With the new U23 event,
okay.
Nathan, McKenna, and Miles will all try to qualify
really?
For that event October 8th.
That's awesome.
Wow. When I looked at the date on that, I said no college guys are going to do this because it's going to cut into the season too far. So that's very interesting that you guys are sending, really three essential guys to your lineup to that event. And then, you know, I assume if the trials are in October, the World Championships probably are December-ish?
Yeah, the World Championships will be November 23rd. So we'll hold them out of the Cliff Keen. They'll go to that instead. You know, the end goal for us as a staff and for these guys, right, is to help develop them to the best of our ability and do things that are going to help them toward that end. And with the current guidelines that we're governed by within NCAA season, we are not in any way hurting the team by having them go to these events. And we're helping them as individuals grow and get into events where they're going to find people that may put them in positions, may cause situations that may not be caused in a dual meet against someone that they're going to control in a, you know, in an easy manner.
Tom,
they all
think,
want to make a living.
Do you think that philosophy that you've clearly adopted the past couple of years, do you think that's been an evolution for you as a coach where you take these blue chip guys with aspirations well past college and kind of morph and develop a plan that satisfies them? Is that something that you've recognized as a coach over the years that maybe 6 or 7 years ago or 15 years ago you would have never dreamt of doing?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, you manage the group that you have, and this particular group, they're so good, right? I mean, Miles Martin, to me, will be a legitimate contender in 20. Nathan Tomasello is.
Yeah.
Right. Joey McKenna wants to be. So they're at such a high level, and I would never do anything to hurt the program, the team, if it would cause an issue with the team winning the NCAAs, then I wouldn't do it. Right? So
right.
The team comes first, but based on current rules, it doesn't hurt us for these guys to go to these events. You know, Kyle obviously set a precedent, and all three of these guys want to win this world championship, this 23rd world championship, and it doesn't hurt us. I believe it only will help them compete better at the end of the year. So we just, you know, you look at the big picture, and with this group of guys and the timing of that event, it makes sense that they go. We also have enough depth that the duel or two that they'll miss, that will hold them out of, it will not cost the program. The other piece is, right, is you've got a home, you've got you've got a fan base that wants to see your superstars. And
right.
They will not miss any home duels necessarily to be involved in that event.
Right.
Nice.
Well, I think it's the right way to think. I mean, I think it's the right way to think, but I think that, you know, as time has gone on, it's kind of like, you know, not to get too deep here, but it kind of reminds me of how John Calipari kind of accommodates these NBA guys. It's kind of like the wrestling version of that I would say that blue chip recruits are liking what is being done with some of these guys that have Olympic aspirations?
Yeah, I think, Tom, we coached together for a while. I think that we're really building, I view it as building trust with them, that as a coach, I truly have their best interest at heart, and which we do. And, allowing them to go and compete in these events, I think only reinforces that we're in this together. You know, it's not a, it is a democracy here, and we're going to discuss things. And sometimes, Nate is going down. I think Utopia, he'd rather stay up, but, sometimes you impose your will as a coach and sometimes you don't. And I think that balance is important.
Right.
For sure. So let's talk about your other gigantic off-season move. And I don't think this is recruiting anymore, so I do believe you can, in fact, discuss it. But Joey McKenna is on campus, on the team, originally out of Blair Academy, went to Stanford for 2 years. I mean, I think he maybe did a gray shirt in Stanford for 2 years. Was a free agent, I guess you will, this summer, and was down between you guys, Lehigh, and Penn State, ends up in Columbus. And, I think he would be a key piece to your NCAA title run this year if you guys are to make one.
Yeah, I think, he was a huge pickup for us in the this summer. We tried to get him out of high school. He went to Stanford, obviously, and he has certainly moved the needle in regard to how much Penn State is favored by. They happen to lose Siriano. They lose Siriano, and I think any wrestling fan would say he was 16 to 22 points.
Yep.
And we pick up McKenna, who's 16 to 22, 25 points. And now you look at it, as a spectator, and, Ohio State has certainly moved more into the picture of winning the championship. So Joey has also been, since he's been here, nothing but a tireless worker and really impressive to have in the room.
Sure.
He's a committed person.
Hey, so let's do some trivia real quick, interjecting. Do you know who the highest first and second, this is a question of the day on FRL, and I had to look it up myself, but the highest first and second total points at NCAAs, do you know who that is ever?
First and second total points?
Yeah, if you add them up.
For their career?
No. If you add up the champion, the team champion NCAAs, the second place champion, second place at NCAAs, you add the teams together, what year had the most points ever in history? Tommy, do you know the Tommy or
say,
Tom?
I'm going to say 2017.
What's your answer, Tommy?
I don't know. I wouldn't even begin to be able to guess.
It was when the Hawks set the scoring record with what did they have? 170, I think. Was it 97 or 96?
Okay. Yeah.
And
what was the second place?
Dang it. There was two other ones. That one
it
was
didn't matter.
One was 264 and one was 263 and a half. I believe 263 and a half was Iowa over Oklahoma State, and the other one was Iowa over Minnesota or Minnesota over Iowa.
In theory, Penn State and Ohio State has to score approximately a little bit north of 130 points each to break that record.
135 each, I think, would do it.
I believe that year that they did that, wasn't that in – that was in the Dome, wasn't it? The Unidome?
Northern Iowa. Man. I remember watching that on TV. That was the year Jesse Whitmer won.
Yes, that was the year Jesse Whitmer won it. And, I think one of the things for us – right now, that certainly I think it's there's an undertone in the room driving this for us is the fact that it's in Cleveland.
Right? Oh,
I mean, how many times you have a team, that's got as much talent as we have, and it happens to be in the home state of the institution. So
let's not forget that this is the greatest.
Oh, don't start, Tommy.
By a mile in
greatest
Ohio
what, Tommy?
History. It's the greatest senior class by a mile in Ohio State wrestling history. And so, we got to send them out. We got to send them out with a bang. You know what I mean? So I think that that's I mean, these seniors have got to be so jacked up. You got Bo Jordan, who's from Ohio, Tomasello, and then Kyle. It's the best senior class that's ever been. So that's probably also added incentive.
Yeah, I mean, Bo Jordan is, you know 3-3-2. He wants to leave with a championship. And Ben, you may know this. I've been you know, bringing this to the public a little bit, but no institution has ever had three athletes become four-time All-Americans together.
Oh, really? I brought this up to Tommy when we were on the phone a little bit ago. And I think you also tweeted that they've never finished lower than third between the three of them, which is like, if you're saying that no one's ever finished in the top eight, like now they're all in the top three, like, holy crap, mind blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they've led us to, you know, they've led us to three trophies. They led us to a first, right? And then a third and a second.
Two Big Ten titles.
You know, Kyle, what's that? Two Big Ten titles. And, you know, I think Kyle, Bo, and Nate are as focused as ever. You know, obviously, Bo hasn't won it yet, wants to win it at home. Nate, you know, hasn't won it since his freshman year. You know, two heartbreaking losses in the semifinals. So, you know, these guys want to help their team win. They want to win it in the state. And, you know, they want to win it as a team. So, there's a lot of good energy right now.
Let's talk a little bit about Bo Jordan, Tom. To me, not to get too detailed on it, but I've seen him work out many times. I went to the practice last Saturday on game day at Ohio State, bunch of recruits in town. And Bo Jordan, first of all, I think he's a hollow man. It looks like he weighs 200 pounds. He told me he came into practice at 183. But he looks like he's training like he never has. I mean, he always looks big, but he looked very vascular, like he'd been training a lot, sweating every day, pumping iron every day. And I haven't seen him hit the corner as hard and as fast on his swing single as he was in practice repeatedly. So, you know, is his off season and his summer, has it been better than it's been in the last few years, or is he just got a different level of focus, or what is it right now? Because he just looks like a different guy.
Yeah, no, I think he's extremely hungry. He's healthy, which he hasn't been. You know, to say, you know, when anytime I say he was 3-3-2, you know, he's a 3-time Big Ten finalist, he's a 1-time Big Ten champion. To know what I know about his lack of ability to really train, and to think of what he's done is remarkable. Last summer he was coming off surgery; he couldn't put weight on his foot, so he couldn't do much. All summer long, it was 6 months of rehab. He comes out of rehab, he starts getting going and gets hurt again. I say this to people and they're like, "Oh, he must be telling." No, the guy, and nothing, Mark Hall is, we see his results, right? He's a 2-time junior world champion. He's a fantastic wrestler. Bo just wasn't really trained for leading up to the big, and this isn't an excuse, right? He got beat in the finals, right? He won the big.
Well, there was a questionable call there in the finals. Tommy and I hotly debated.
Right, no, and you know, I wasn't happy with the call, obviously. But the reality is that the fact that he had 9 minutes, 9 total minutes of live wrestling logged. The 2 months leading up to the Big Ten. So this is a guy that was biking and lifting weights to get ready because he has so many issues with his feet. Since then, he was healthy. He was healthy on the mat from an injury standpoint, but he just wasn't able to train really hard. Since that point, all summer long, he's been healthy. His deadlift has gone up like 75 pounds. His cardio is through the roof. He's in great shape. He's strong as an ox. And, you know, we keep him healthy, and he's going to have a real shot to win. Now, Valencia is a complete stud at the weight, and so is Hall and others. But to your point, Tom, we feel really good about where he is right now. And, you know, Ben, we talked about this a little bit ago with Kyle and mentality. You know, Kyle's never been hurt, right? He's always able to put the hours in that he needs to allow yourself to believe that you paid the price. And I personally feel like, you know, that's a huge piece of the mental side of it, is that you deal with the things you need to deal with. You eat right, you sleep right, you train right. that certainly leads to a bit of self-confidence.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know how Bo could walk on the mat, and quite frankly, believing that he earned this, when the reality is that he did all he could, but he just really didn't have the, you know, the enough suffering behind him. He does right now. We've got to keep him healthy. And there's nothing more that I want to see than this guy end his career the way he wants to.
Sure. That reminds me, I'm going to give a shameless plug for myself and any sports psychologists out here. Tom, I want to get someone to do a sports psych book because I really don't like a lot of the ones on the market. But I think there's this both sides of the coin mentality that a lot of sports psych books don't discuss. And it's funny you're talking about Bo Jordan not being able to train the way he needs to train. Well, I think competition, you know, I think there's two sides to it. And if you have one or the other, and you guys will probably both be able to very quickly think of guys like this. But, I call the one side the cowboy, the guy that doesn't prepare right, he doesn't sleep right, he probably parties too much, he doesn't do school well.
Yeah.
But when it's match time, he shows up ready to scrap, no matter what, right?
Yeah.
And then you have – sometimes you have the other guy who does everything. He sleeps right, he eats right, he diets right, he cuts weight right, he does every single thing right. But then if one tiny little thing goes wrong in his preparation to matches, he panics and he doesn't know how to compete under suboptimal circumstances, right? And so I think it's
– Yeah, no.
I think it's so important to have both sides of those, which is, you know, you're talking about Bo Jordan. That's probably – he probably said, screw it. You know, I've been wrestling my whole life. I'm going to go out here and win a title or something, even though
– and you're right, man. And you're right. Yeah, and you're right. And I would say that, you know, for him, you know, the whole focus is gratitude, right? Despite the fact you're not ready. I mean, are you really – like everyone says, well, I really want to get out there and wrestle. But do you really? You know, do you –
Right.
You know, were you secretly helping – you know, hoping that the best guy in the weight got beat so you'd have to face him? Or were you really saying, you know what, I want to see where I stand? And I think Travell's really helped him that way. And our staff, the things we say, the things we talk about is, you know, what is your mind going to think when you are in that situation? Are you truly going to be grateful for, and show the love you have for what you're doing? And I think he did that throughout the Big Tens and Nationals. The brain switch of, yeah, I'm not prepared, but I'm here, and I love what I'm doing, and I'm going to do everything I can to show the love I have for what I'm doing. And
you know, it's funny. I listened to a Travell interview after Kyle won a few weeks ago, and they were asking Travell a bunch of questions in the middle of the interview. I forget how we got to it, but Travell had said, you know, when Kyle walked off the mat after the semis, I said to him, you know, you've been telling the whole world that you want this match to happen with Sajulayev. Do you really want it to happen? That's the rhetoric that Kyle Snyder's getting from his coach hours before the world finals. And I think it really is a good call out for someone who lives the right lifestyle, because if anything, you're indirectly beating their chest and say, I know you're ready. That's why I'm asking you the question, because I know that you really do want this. You know what I mean? So I think that's cool stuff.
Yeah. Nice. Well, let's talk about one more topic. We don't want to steal too much of your time, but you know, Tommy brought up the fact that you guys just broke ground on a new wrestling facility. It's allegedly going to be the greatest wrestling facility on the face of planet Earth. Tommy says, but, you know, Tommy is biased, very biased, of course. So
I wonder why. How are you, Tommy?
I want to give you the floor to you know, tell us about it, how you raise the funds for it, and what it's going to be when it's all done. I saw some pictures; it does look pretty fantastic.
You know, it's you know, as of the day it's built, you know, it'll be the nicest facility on Earth. Now we know how human beings think, you know, we're excited about it, obviously. The Jennings family really stepped up and did the lead gift. You know, a guy that was a high school wrestler, you know, never wrestled in college, but, you know, went on, didn't go to Ohio State, loved the sport, you know, remembered, you know, the Winnebago trips with all his buddies that his dad took him on, and, you know, got behind the program. And so he was the lead gift. I was obviously a lot of love in the community led to this. Tasked with raising all the funds for it. The university gave us a piece of land and we had to raise the funds for it. We raised about $8 million, and you know, we've broken ground. In the next 15, 16 months, we'll be in it. And it has everything that a student athlete, you know, you would everything that you would want for people you care about, right? It's a reflection of the love that we have for what we do and the people that do it. So, you know, there's really nothing in there at this point that we could think of that we wouldn't need to help these guys reach their full potential. So it'll be nice to be in. We know that these things don't win championships, but it certainly speaks to the commitment, you know, that we have, Ohio State has for the sport and the people in it. So we're excited about it.
Awesome. Awesome. Tommy, you got any more questions for Tom or no?
No, I mean, I could go on and on, but I think, you know, I mean, it's going to be an exciting season, and I think we covered the fun stuff, the stuff that people want to have. You know, I got one other question, Tom. I'll let you go. Is Micah Jordan going 57? And is that the same type of conversation with Mick that you had with Tomasello, or is it something that maybe he wants to do because Rutherford is a pretty dominant guy at 49? Not to say that Jason Nolf isn't at 57, but how is that going?
Yeah, so you know, obviously with any decision, you bring in all the people whose lives it's going to impact. And I think that when we got McKenna, you know, the decision was, okay, well, Mick, how do you feel about moving up to 57? Now Mick was our third highest point scorer. He major teched everybody except for his one person, Sorensen.
Right? Kyle, Bo, then Mick at the NCAAs? In terms of point scoring?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. So it was Kyle, Colin, Mick. I believe that Mick and Colin scored more than Bo, even though Bo was in the final. Which is another topic. You know, so they had majored, you know, they just majored or protect everybody, so those bonus points, right? Led them to more points than Bo was in the finals. But so it was, you know, obviously when you get McKenna. Now McKenna and Keyshawn are going to battle it out at 41. We're doing that very soon, and the winner picks his weight, and the loser will go 49. They can both wrestle 49. They can both wrestle 41, and clearly with those two, you move Mick up. You know, looking at the point total, you know, Mick, you could say with who's back, he's if he wrestles to his capability. I don't want to say he's a safe third, but he's a relatively safe third. At 57, you know, you've got Nolf and a few other guys, and we feel right now that this is going to give us the best chance. I think that Micah can beat Nolf, right? I know Nolf had a great career, you know, but style-wise and matchup-wise, we're looking forward. We have obviously tremendous respect for Nolf. He's one of my favorite wrestlers in college. Incredibly creative, but so is Mick. So, you know, we're looking forward to that, among other matches. Kemmerer's tough at 57, but ultimately, team decision. We want to win this thing, and the best way to do it is to move Mick up. And Mick's a team guy, so he's up.
That's a hell of a lineup. I'm happy to hear that. I just knew that, you know, all those conversations are interesting every step of the way, so I'm that's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, Tommy, and you know, obviously his dad is what they've won the last 17 state championships. His dad understands coaching, understands people. You know, and it's nice that to have someone in a position. You know, he knows it's a tough call, right?
Yeah.
Son was third year, fourth year before. You know, and he's just, hey, I understand. You know, whatever's best for the team, and if Mick's doing well at 57.
And to your point, though. This could be best for Mick. It just remains to be seen.
Yeah.
It's not absolutely not what's best for him. It's just an interesting decision, but it could end up being the best thing as an individual.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna pick your for sure, Todd, like, pick your poison, right? You got two of the best guys in college, either at 49 or 57. You know, I think matchup wise, I think style wise, if I like the matchup with Nolf more than the matchup with Rutherford.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to see how it goes February 3rd.
Love it.
Nice. Love it. Well, appreciate the time, and best of luck this season. And I'm sure Tommy will be very adamant about keeping us updated on the Buckeyes' progress on this podcast.
Thanks, Ben. Hey, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. See you, Tom.
All right. Good night.
All right, Tommy. Well, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
I mean, of course.
If you're a Buckeye fan, you got to be pretty excited at this point.
I'm pretty jazzed. You know, to me, when you think about this lineup, and the biggest question marks to me are a transfer guy from Pitt at 165 that went 2-2 last year at the Nationals, and a freshman in Keyshawn Hayes that's already ranked in the top 10, and a sophomore in Luke Pletcher who won a few matches at the weight up the year prior. I mean, when those are the question marks in your entire lineup, I mean, question marks, shit. I mean, in a lot of programs, those guys are, so when those are considered, question marks, to me, it's like, you know, this team could have 10 All-Americans. They could have 5 or 6 finalists. Will they? You know, that would be obviously shooting for the stars. But, you know, they've got the same firepower, in my opinion, Ben, that Penn State does. You got to remember, this Ohio State team beat Penn State straight up at the Big Tens without Suriano.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And no McKenna. Now, I do think that Penn State's Big Ten team last year is not as good as their team this year. So sure. I think they've improved even without Suriano.
Yeah.
But so is Ohio State. So I feel like this is a coin flip. In my mind, for this year, I think it's a coin flip. I don't know what you think, who you give the side edge to.
Man, it is a coin flip. It was not a coin flip. It is a coin flip. So, you know, I said after NCAAs last year, one of the things I love the most about the NCAA championships is, in fact, the team race. So when after this year's NCAA championships, you felt like, well, how is it even feasible that anyone beats Penn State next year? And so now that there's actually, you know, another dog in the fight, it makes it pretty exciting. Hey, so I didn't want to bring this back up when Tom was on the podcast, but the second highest scoring first and second place teams ever, I think, was Tom Ryan on the team at Iowa in 1991? Because that was the year when Iowa beat Oklahoma State and they scored a combined 265 and a third points, or in three fourths points.
I'm pretty sure Tom Ryan was on the team in 91. Okay, so I know he wrestled Iowa 2 years. He got second and third. 1 year he lost to Pat Smith.
Yeah.
Super tight battle, and I think the next year, I forget who he lost to in the semis, but he was second and third. I think it was 91 and 92 or 90 and 91.
Hey, can I have just a random wrestling thought? Weird wrestling thought.
Yeah, of course.
So as I look through these, if you go to Wikipedia, it's on there the championship and the runner up. You know, it's super fascinating how it fluctuates. Between having really high scores, you know, between say. That year was 265, the next year was 249. And then, you know, you go all the way down to years like 1994, the combined first and second place total was 170.
Right.
You know, and then like 198, 99. And then, you know, you go back up 2001, you go back up to 264. It's really fascinating to kind of go through the ebbs and the flows of the scoring. You almost wonder if it's, you know, because obviously we're at the high tide, right, of, you know, these kind of, I guess you'd call them superpower teams where they have all these, and, you know, Penn State with all the recruits you're getting next year. You almost think, like, it goes in ebbs and tides because then at some point everyone's like, well, I don't want to freaking sit on the bench at that school. And so they go to other schools, right, and so the talent spreads back out. And then once it spreads back out, it regathers because if you look through these years, it kind of, it's really weird how the combined total is gigantic and then shrinks.
That's an interesting observation that has some legitimacy to it.
Yeah, because, if you look through, like, it happens again. So, for example, like 2004 and 5 were pretty big, but then, like, you go to 2007, it's 196 points wins. You go the next year, it's less than 200. The next year, it's 194, and then it starts going back up again to – 2012 is 160. The next year is 242. You know, it's really bizarre.
Right.
So anyways, that's my random thought of the day.
There you go, man. Well, I thought that was a good episode.
That was a lot of fun having Tom Ryan on.
You are listening to the T. Rowe and Funky Show, brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.